Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. And welcome to Cabbage and Shame, episode 2. Today we have a very special guest. We have Lisa Cabrera, fan, friend, individual.
Token Eastern European,
coming all the way from London. I say all the way. Nathan's
that, that token
coming.
Eastern European city.
Yeah.
That well-known Londoner.
London grad.
I mean, yeah. I say from all the way. Yeah, Nathan, you're recording from Portland, Oregon. So, I mean, there's 300 miles and there's 3,000 miles plus.
How far is Portland?
Oh, this is
London?
Not a geography lesson.
Let's
please.
5,000 miles.
5,000 miles. And I would walk.
5,000 miles.
Mm.
Right.
So apologies for what is probably going to be a whole lot of latency.
We'll figure it out. It's cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome.
So today we are here to talk about Cold Wave, predominantly Eastern European Cold Wave, like Cold Wave Revival. But we'll talk about some early stuff as well, and some maybe not Eastern European stuff as well. But to kick things off, Lisa, what is your favorite album of 2020?
Oof, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. But I will have to say Fiona Apple and Fetch the Bolt Cutters, because it is a fantastic piece of songwriting and I keep coming back to it over and over again, and I love it. And also, it's the perfect music to wail in a bath to. So, yeah. What else do you need?
I mean, that's the most important measure of any album.
Oh, yeah.
Can you sing in the shower or can you cry in the bath about it?
Yeah. Also, can you do like all the cleaning around your house to it? That's another one.
I mean, I find jazz helps for that. I've been doing a lot of washing up to jazz recently.
I can see it on LastFM.
Yeah. Soccer 96 released a really good EP.
LastFM earlier, and it was like, oh, Will's been listening to The Comet Is Coming. And then he listened to one Milo track, and he listened to The Comet Is Coming again.
It was actually the other way around.
Oh my god, you are still listening to The Comet Is Coming on my friend activity on Spotify. The universe wakes up.
That album is one of the seminal jazz albums of this millennia. I'm putting that out there right now.
It's phenomenal.
But let's get back to post-punk. Because otherwise we're going to be talking about which household chores requires which music all day.
We can't be post-punk yet.
That's just punk.
So what is the ideal household chore to listen to Molchat Doma to?
Oh, anything. I think if we are going to take Sudna, which is like their main track now because it's TikTok viral.
Just TikTok.
Shame. I think something involving heavy wrist action, so any sort of dusting, yes indeed, any sort of dusting, vacuum cleaning, washing the plate,
scrubbing the bath,
so yeah, no, both wrist and hip action, I think, both are important.
When scrubbing the bath?
Yeah. Wiggle.
This episode brought to you by Jason Derulo and questionable
dancing. Yeah, lockdowns lasted too long.
Yeah, goodness. Right. So, I think we had some questions that we were going to ask of ourselves.
Mm.
I think they were sort of the what's the scene like at the moment? Why do we think the scene has developed in such a fashion, and what are the differences between what is mainly coming out of Eastern Europe and the continent in general from a post-punk perspective compared to the post-punk revival that's currently going on in the UK, particularly in London, Bristol, Leeds, and the like.
But I think before jumping into that, I think, what is the scene? Like, what is it that we're talking about in your opinion, Lisa?
Well, that's the thing. In a sense, the Eastern European post-punk scene is quite different to the UK one, because the UK one is more kind of guitar and punk bass, while the Eastern European stuff is very much kind of the electronic cold wave. That's kind of the 80s French inspired.
Yeah, a bit more akin to the sort of things that were behind the wall almost. Definitely.
A lot of people describe.
Sorry, you go ahead, Nathan.
I was going to say, a lot of people describe it as kind of more synth pop derived than punk.
Oh, it
derived.
It's definitely so more synth based, yeah. And it's a bit, it has more of like a bedroom vibe to it as well. It's kind of very lo-fi production. And it's very much kind of like centered on just the domestic ennui, the everyday, and just kind of, yeah, the economic hopelessness of Russia and kind of the Eastern Bloc now. So, yeah, I don't think it has energy to it, definitely, but it's not kind of the energy of rage or the energy of just kind of defiance. It's just kind of like, yeah, I'm going to get fucked with my friends and listen to some records because everything is shit.
It's a sort of hopelessness rather than a call to action.
Oh, yeah, indeed. The only call to action they have is like, I'm into BDSM and wearing a rubber mask. Which is a lyric from something. I mean, not the BDSM, but the rubber mask is.
This is a bit of a change from us talking about sports team only a few
yeah,
weeks ago.
But yeah, the song that it comes from is by The End of Electronics, which is a Russian, or even, I might be lying. They might be slightly like Latvian or something. So, band. Yeah, that's another thing. I'm very worried.
I want to say they're Russian.
Yeah. I'm very worried and that people will send me hate mail because I'll be referring to a lot of this as Russian, because most of the time the lyrics are in Russian. While it is important to note that, of course, like Molchat Damai and everything are Belarusian, and then they're just basically the ex-USSR countries. So don't worry, I'm not a Soviet supporter or a greedy Ruski. I don't think that everything is Russia that speaks Russian. I'm just referring to it as that out of laziness, basically. So don't send me hate mail.
So End of Electronics, they're, I'm not getting a straightforward answer on this, but their record label is based in Moscow, so I think it's probably a good bet.
Yeah. Goody,
we'll
goody.
Go forward with it.
And interestingly enough, where people listen to them, the top thing is Mexico City, and then Santiago, Chile, and then Poland, and Berlin, and Latvia. Well, that will be our future conversation about why they're so popular in
Latin America.
Yeah, Latin America. Come to Brazil.
Every single YouTube video, top comment, come to Brazil.
So we've defined the roots of where we've ended up in terms of what is modern Eastern European and I suppose continental, since there are some Italian and French numbers amongst these people. It's still rooted in a similar time frame to the original post-punk peddlers of, you know, Gang of Four, The Cure, The Smiths. There's another one that I'm missing. Joy Division, obviously being probably the greatest example of where I think a lot of the cold wave scene is derived from.
And of course, Krautrock as well.
Krautrock is a big...
Yeah.
And I'm not sure kind of how much of that music did actually go into the Soviet Union, but I'm sure it did, because kind of rock and alternative music did make its way into Russia, and it was very much kind of like a smuggling underground operation where there would be poor quality tapes that people would gather around in those sort of kind of listening parties. So it was there, and that's where the kind of the Russian rock scene got its kind of inspiration from, but in a very kind of distorted way, because also a lot of the time people couldn't understand the lyrics, they couldn't understand English or, God forbid, another language. So
I imagine there's probably quite a lot of broadcasting out of West Berlin.
Oh, yeah.
To, well, the rest of East Germany.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, in which it was encased. That would probably feed in a lot more of the krautrock that was coming out around that time.
Yeah, totally. And there's a huge East German punk scene as well that emerged in the mid to late 80s. But I honestly do think it's kind of like building on the Russian scene is kind of separate from that. So you have there was some kind of, I mean, let me know if you guys disagree with this, but when I'm listening to Cold Wave, it I call it Cold Wave, which I think is technically derived from post-punk, but a lot of times I do think this music is more kind of synth poppy than it is just Cold Wave.
Mm.
It does have that kind of gothic influence that you can hear with like Bauhaus, but to me it sounds almost kind of more new wave derived.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you.
Does that make sense?
Soft Cell, Depeche Mode, all having strong hands in its development.
So
Depeche Mode probably being a really big one.
Depeche Mode is really big in Russia. I must point that out. But I think I'll jump in here as well with a bit more of a historical background to the kind of Russian music scene and whatever. All kind of popular music, more or less, that is around today, I'm not kind of counting rap and whatever, but basically the origins of Russian rock and all the things that came out of that were very much in the 80s when the state started. And perestroika, when the state started allowing kind of imports from the West. And there were state-sanctioned rock clubs where like bands would perform, but they weren't allowed to have any sort of naughty lyrics with naughty words and naughty sentiments, like, I don't want to do work. But a lot of the stuff that they were influenced by were just the standard kind of your 70s rock, like the Beatles and even Led Zeppelin. What else am I thinking of? That there were a T-Rex and whatever. And so the bands that emerged, like out of all the bands that emerged, the main one was Kino, which translates to cinema. And they were enormously influential until the 90s, where the lead singer Viktor Tsoi died in a car accident. But basically, they rejected the punk origins of what they were doing and the more kind of guitar-driven stuff. And they went slightly more Talking Heads. And when they started performing, they had a drum machine and everything and very introspective, kind of very elaborate lyrics that were kind of, dark, but they were slightly kind of more out there. And I think a lot of the Russian bands these days are really heavily influenced by them because they were just such a phenomenon in Russia. They were more or less like the only ones of that sort of rock star status.
They were like the Russian Beatles almost.
Oh my God, yeah. No, definitely. There's like a lot of there was like a wave of suicides after Viktor Tsoi's death. Because, there's like a massive mural to him. But he is basically like a legend and an icon because he was also in a few films as well. And they were very much the kind of pioneers of the new wave kind of influence in Russia and in Russian music. But that wasn't particularly adopted. So Russian rock went primarily just classic kind of soft rock with occasional twinges of like heavy metal or whatever, but it was pretty much stamped out by the slightly more kitschy sounds of Europop that got imported very heavily into Russia in the 90s. So at the moment, as everyone is saying in Russia, Russian rock is dead, and it's very much kind of not part of the culture or whatever. So the things that young people would listen to these days would be very, very Western.
So, in your opinion, we've got kind of this Eastern European cold wave scene, for lack of a better word, but then you also have like a very Western version of it in, you know, like Light Asylum, for example.
Yeah.
Or even kicking it off in Italy with like Soviet, of course, drawing influences from the Russian scene, but is there like a separation between those scenes, or are they kind of all mixed into one and going for the same audience, do you think?
Well, that's really hard to say, considering that sort of the Eastern European stuff is getting so popular within the Cold Wave and Dark Wave scene. There is, I don't know whether there's some sort of like a commercial boom going on, or is it because it's kind of fits in so well, or is it because it is different? I can't really tell. I think a lot, because I, as a Russian speaker, I get a kick out of hearing kind of Russian lyrics in an unexpected way. Like, I would never expect to hear them like that. So I have like a slightly biased mm-hmm. opinion towards it all. But I also think, I don't know, they really did take over the market. And I think that it is something to do with the marketing of it all and just pushing that Soviet aesthetic. And especially kind of in our age with all kind of like the memes and the shitposting mm-hmm. and the whole like Gopnik aesthetic or whatever. It's all kind of mixed together in this idea of Soviet Russia. I mean, even if you like listen and kind of like look at those TikToks, which I don't generally do. I don't have TikTok because I'm very cool. Everyone's like, oh, I love the Soviet aesthetic. I love the Soviet aesthetic. And it kind of becomes just, it just blends with this whole Cold Wave, Dark Wave aesthetic as well. Just like mm-hmm. misery. Yeah. Nothing portrays misery so well as Russia. So, you know.
Everyone's been watching Chernobyl and just...
I know, exactly.
They've been channeling that.
Yeah, no, pretty much. Yeah, everyone's digging it so much. They're like, oh, I serve the Soviet Union.
Which I find really funny because... So, like, Soviet, the band, it's a Northern Italian Cold Wave / Dark Wave band that launched in... I don't know how familiar you are with them.
Yeah, I've listened to it,
launched in 2008. And clearly, they were well ahead of that curve.
Yeah. Oh, it's,
in terms of just trying to commodify
definitely.
The Soviet Union.
I think also She Passed Away, who are Turkish. I think they started quite early. I'm quickly Googling that. And like Boy Harsha as well. They started coming out like around 2010. So the scene definitely didn't start in Russia, I don't think. I wasn't looking actively for Russian music around that time, but I certainly didn't come across much. I think the earliest kind of Russian band that I found and I liked and who had that sort of cold sound and who have been around for a while are Motorama, who were recently in London actually for a very good gig. And I think they're on their like sixth studio album now, but I wouldn't necessarily call them Cold Wave as such, because although there is a coldness about this sound, which is like very Joy Division-y, it's still kind of, mm-hmm. it's lacking in that electronic synthiness of, yeah, something that you would put on in a sex dungeon. So yeah. I don't think that sort of thing started in Russia. Definitely not.
I was going to ask where did it start, but we basically just covered that.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, She Passed Away, formed in 2006. So this is, ooh. Yeah, I know. And then let's have I know, right? And then we look at Boy Harsha, and that is, actually, no, this is 2013, but still. And then Lebanon Hanover, that was pretty early, wasn't it, as well? Where are you?
Yeah, so it was 2010.
Yeah, there we go.
Although, this isn't, my German's not great, and this article is in German. Yeah, 2010.
Yeah. Leaning at Aspera as well, 2011, Cabaret Nocturne, which is more electronic, like actual dance electronic. Actually, no, that's 2015 or whatever. What's Zeno Noclander, 2004. And it's more kind of, from what I'm seeing, Also, can't forget Black Marble, my favorites. I love Black Marble. Black Marble was around 2010 as well. 2012. But yeah, I think it was more kind of a experimental, even like New York and Brooklyn type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Where you had people like John Mouse and Ariel Pink and whatever, all kind of just really going for that 80s sound, kind of lo-fi and synth-based. And I think that synth got co-opted into just electronic, darker music.
It's interesting that a lot of them come from the beginning of the decade, because, yeah. You know, Doomerism, which has been quite prominent, especially under lockdown.
Oh, yay.
You know, a lot of Doomer music is very much that darker, cold wave and post-punk, either from the 80s or more modern in the modern cold wave.
Does anyone remember Witch House? Because that was a thing, wasn't it?
Witch House?
Yeah, well, like Crystal Castles and everything. There was, and that was kind of the little dark outlet for all the little goths.
I mean, correct me if my music history and this is totally wrong, but is this just kind of like the next instance of gothic music?
I would say so, yeah.
So, and like some people would argue, like there is currently an ongoing goth scene. I just spent the weekend kind of listening to it. It's pretty good, but like it's just kind of very much just like, you know, Bauhaus derived.
Yeah.
But like it's not particularly big, as far as I can tell. But yeah, is this? I mean, could this just be the next kind of goth aesthetic?
Yeah, I personally think so, because the whole kind of aesthetic of it is the doom and the masochism. Just it's slightly more kind of fashion and leather, which is what Boy Harsha is trying to peddle, and then like sex steals and whatever. But a lot of them, they still kind of, if you look at a lot of the cold wave and dark wave playlists, and especially like the Doomer playlist, there is a lot of The Cure on it. And they seem to, yeah, worship Robert Smith.
I was actually reading an article about Robert Smith and the goth movement. Because, yeah, as you mentioned, Robert Smith was a poster child for... Mm. Goths,
I mean,
and people
still,
yeah, but people still refer to The Cure as a goth band, which Robert Smith vehemently denies. And he was saying that he understands why, especially with, you know, his love of
dark makeup,
well, love of dark makeup and creepers.
Yeah,
but the way he referred to it was that he generally wrote his lyrics whilst depressed, but then wouldn't write when not depressed, which was mainly why most of, you know, The Cure's lyrics are very dark and introspective, and why can't I be you? It's a very interesting, it's funny that The Cure is still so core to that scene.
Yeah. He's like the grandfather or the father of goths, really, in the kind of that music understanding, whether he likes it or not.
The proto-goth.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think like the modern dark wavers, cold wavers are slight goths. I personally think I am aesthetically not, but quintessentially I think perhaps I am slightly goth. If I were high school in the 80s now, I would definitely be a goth. What a soundbite!
I feel you there. That being said, I did spend the weekend doing a lot of research on goth music, and it was just kind of I got into that mindset for a bit, and it's like, yeah, I can see. I was actually talking to Anya about this, of like the, oh yeah, you know, it's not my aesthetic, but I can see why people have that aesthetic, and I really respect that aesthetic. Which is funny, because I think, you know, especially in the UK, there's, you know, the what is it, like, you know, the classic Scottish Twitter thing of, you know, no one's racist here so long as you're not a goth.
I've never heard that.
It's such a thing on Scottish Twitter, is that goths are just like the worst. Apart from Tories, goths are the worst. Which I don't understand, really. I mean, if we're weighing in on where we think we would have stood in the 80s, I think I'd probably have just been jamming out to, you know, CBGBs and any art rock coming out of New York.
Oh, that would be cool, wouldn't it?
Just a shout out, Courting. Wouldn't be getting on David Byrne's bad side. Shout out to Courting. Could put that in the playlist.
This was not the line I expected us to draw between the two scenes, is one is the new goth movement. I was expecting this to go a very different direction. But I think we've solved the question of post-punk and Cold Wave and their separation. It's just the new goth movement.
British post-punk.
And anyone who disagrees with that is exactly. Of course, goth music is post-punk.
But then again, so, I wouldn't say that the British post-punk is goth. I really wouldn't. It just really does not have the same energy.
No.
A lot of the current British post-punk scene is very upbeat. It is. I mean, a lot of it is talking about, you know, very bad and negative issues. But
yeah,
they're doing it's a very
kind of like "fuck you" attitude, rather than "fuck me" attitude.
It's quite frankly, if we're going to if you classify Minutemen as like post-hardcore rather than post-punk, I think most of the British scene is post-hardcore.
Yeah,
but then again, I think most of the British scene is just, it's really derived from Minutemen.
And The Fall.
And The Fall, yeah.
I think even just, we'll have to admit it, a bit of Britpop as well.
Sports team especially.
Yeah, as much as we loathe to say it, but yes, Oasis is still lurking there in the background.
I'm putting my foot down. Blur is lurking there in the background.
Yes, Blur, yes, indeed.
Blur and Pulp.
And Pulp, yeah. Oh, we had a chat about that and then Glastonbury set, yeah.
But if we talk about The Fall, are The Fall not kind of at least goth adjacent?
I don't know, I can't wait.
They did have more introspective and downbeat stuff at times. I haven't listened to enough of The Fall to really comment properly.
Yeah.
I mean, I would argue, I mean, they're not goth, but I would say they're definitely goth adjacent. It is more introspective lyrics. It's kind of the soundscape is bigger with a lot more synths, especially. I mean, I don't know how we're defining these things, but in my opinion, I'd say it's kind of goth adjacent, and the stuff that derives from that, I think it is more similar to, like, you know, Multatoma and whatnot, than say Squid is.
Yeah, and Squid is making more. Squid's experimenting more around their guitars and their synths and their drums, I think, in a fashion reminiscent of Minutemen, The Fall. A lot of the original post-punkers from the 80s and late 70s, as opposed to Cold Wave, which has leaned more aggressively into the, you know, the lo-fi vocals, the heavy reliance on synth, distortion, and drum machines more than live drums.
Yeah, I think the British scene definitely showcases the guitar a lot more, which makes it kind of closer to traditional rock music. Because in kind of the Eastern European scene and the whole kind of more electronic cold wave scene in general, it's very much like the guitar is the auxiliary thing that just kind of blends into the general sound, or is the rhythm, or just the bass is its own thing. But whereas the British sound is much more kind of traditionally punk punchy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it is based around the guitar.
Totally. Yeah.
It is guitar music.
It very much is. I've also just realised there aren't really any female vocalists in the Eastern European scene that much at all. While the British one really uses a lot of the kind of punchy female vocal of just shouting.
I think it's still disproportionately, it's a disproportionately male fronted
genre, but at least
there is a female presence.
Yeah, and I think there is a subset of bands that really kind of utilize that.
Not to mention that, actually, not to say that they're all, most, a lot of very prominent bands in the British post-punk scene still will have, even if they don't have a female vocalist, will have like a female bassist or a female drummer or a female guitarist. Like they will have mixed gender bands.
Yeah.
It is, generally speaking, I can think of a few exceptions here. I mean, namely Black Country New Road, that's totally not that way. But if I noticed this going through a lot of various photos of bands, it tends to be three guys and a girl.
Yeah.
Almost as a rule, it is a four piece band. It's three dudes and one woman.
Squid being an exception.
Mm.
Yeah. So I mean, even like it doesn't, even if it's a female vocalist, it'll be three guys for all the instruments. So like Dry Cleaning is an example of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. But yeah, I think the
so as indie heads would argue that the sad girl with guitar replacing sad boy with guitar unfortunately has not solved
diversity in indie music,
gender inequality.
Yeah,
because there's still three guys behind her.
Yeah, it's very much kind of like we're going to put this kind of riot girl situation as a
with the likes of Dream Child, Dream Wife.
Well,
who
we
have
just
their not their debut, jam. Their second album coming out on Friday, which is the 3rd of July.
Well, I think there is a lot of Riot Grrrl revival as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of separate to some extent from the kind of the rest of the scene. Not like fully separate, but in the same way we talk about Riot Grrrl as its own thing, it is kind of more derived from like L7 and... I'm blanking on other Riot Grrrl bands at the moment. 7 Year Bitch, Hole, you know, that group. It is kind of more derived from that, I think, than kind of just that Minutemen sound.
I'm interested to talk about why we think it's such a thing, Cold Wave, in South America.
I am very interested about that too. I just can't figure out. Really, I really can't. I thought, I don't know, this is kind of just a long shot, but are they vibing with the sort of oppressive government, economic decline, just intellectual poverty, or all of that, that's kind of the thing in Russia? But it's not that they are necessarily Russian speakers, so do they actually really... research the lyrics? Because it's not like those bands really put out the lyrics a lot or bother to translate them. So or do they just vibe with just subconsciously with that sort of aesthetic?
So to complicate this question slightly, like looking at Light Asylum, they were first most popular in LA, which is kind of ironic because they're a New York band. But then second most popular city is Mexico City. Again, it's even with like the kind of like that, the New York side of the scene, it's has a very big South and Central American following.
There we go. You're going to laugh at this. So I found this band called Prud, means pond, in on Spotify. So they have 2,542 monthly listeners. They are slightly more of the guitar-driven, punky sound, but still, yeah, Cold Wave. So in their about thing, and where people listen to them first is Mexico City, then there's Chile, there's Colombia, then there's Mexico again, and then there's Peru, which just blows my mind.
So this is another, like, to again add another layer of potential complexity to this, going through like Lebanon Hanover, LA is the only American city on there. Could it also be just the large number of Mexican immigrants in LA that are attributing, like, contributing this as well?
Might be.
And that's why it's more LA focused and not New York focused, despite the fact that Light Asylum was from New York.
Yeah. There we go. Oh, yet again, I'm looking at another band who's a lot more. This is now, we are in the six-figure monthly listeners. Boyerac. Yet again, top listeners, Mexico, then Chile, then Mexico again, then Colombia, and then Latvia. So it's just, yeah, it is baffling. Although another kind of inkling that I have, and that might be completely wrong, but perhaps it's because Eastern European bands tour Latin America more than they tour Europe, because it's very hard to get visas, especially for the UK, because it's a separate visa process. But yeah, getting a Schengen visa is a bitch. So perhaps it's just financially and just bureaucratically easier to tour other countries and therefore get popular there.
That is an ongoing meme about world tours being America, Europe, Australia, maybe Japan.
Yeah. Well, no, and Russians.
A lot of it is probably visa based.
Yeah, because I see
that makes sense, because I mean, Sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
So Russian visas are incredibly expensive. Chinese visas are incredibly expensive, and there's a concept called basically retributive visa costs, where a country, say the UK is particularly famous for doing this. They set the cost of their visas for, you know, some non-Western country exorbitantly high.
Mm.
And so that country then inversely sets the cost of the visa exorbitantly high to make up for that. It's kind of this political, like a diplomatic move. And then that drives up prices for both groups of people.
I definitely know that is the case from personal experience and from experience of people that I know, that it's definitely the case with the UK. And also it's quite a precarious visa application thing, where you have to have booked things in advance and prove that you're going to play a particular gig. And then it's not a given that they will give you the visa. And so there is the possibility of cancellations and whatever. And that's why a lot of Eastern European bands, if they do Europe, they will bypass the UK. And like the closest concert you can get to would be like an Amsterdam or Paris. But yes, I agree with you. I think with Latin America, there's also less Russians going there in general. So the passport office will be vaguely empty and they don't have to queue up for as long. And I think, yeah, they would get a better bang for their buck. But I remember looking at kind of the early touring history of Motorama, and they do a lot of Latin American tours. They really, really do.
This feels like a chicken and the egg question, though.
I know, exactly. Because in order for them to tour, there ought to be some sort of a fan base. So is that a thing that, do they market it? Or do they just kind of hope for the best?
It's a long way to go to hope for the best.
Yeah, I know, right?
Especially if a record label is backing them.
Yeah, and there's other things. I'm looking at, I'm looking at Plojo's concert history right now. And it's mostly Central and Eastern Europe, Spain, no Latin America.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, it's an exclusively European tour, and yet Plojo's listening base is primarily, at least according to Spotify, is primarily, you know, Latin American.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I don't think these sort of things are shared. Especially in Russia, I don't think Spotify is as big. Like, I've never asked, I don't think it is, because I highly doubt like some of these bands are managing to exist on such a small following. I think, well, there's Facebook is not really a thing in Russia as much, so there's ВКонтакте, and I'm sure they have other like streaming services that are alternative to Spotify. So perhaps there is a whole story that we don't really know, and what we're getting here is just like a snapshot from people who use the same streaming service as we do.
We've got the purest Western perspective.
Oof, yeah. We do. Spotify is not available in Russia.
Oh, is it not?
Or Belarus, or there might be like a client you can use, but this might be like it's available in Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia.
Mm.
So that might be why we're getting kind of, you know, the Baltic representation there.
Okay, but that makes me even more scared to go back to Russia. What am I gonna do without my Spotify?
Use a VPN. I mean, let's be honest, it's Russia. Everyone uses a VPN.
Yeah, it's very true. But it's hard.
This is why I've been buying music on Bandcamp recently.
Mm.
Check me supporting the artists. What if
is available in Russia?
Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, there's no Russian Spotify. I mean, I assume there are probably a lot of Russian listeners that just, you know, use a VPN to...
Yeah.
Go to either somewhere in Baltic states.
Torrenting is a thing.
True.
Massively.
I mean, Russian sites are the lifeblood of internet piracy right now.
I mean, I'm not sure whether Rootracker is still floating about, but that was definitely the fountainhead of my kind of music development as a youngster.
Mine was LimeWire.
Yeah, I never really used that.
It gets super sketch.
Hmm.
Mine was downloading off of YouTube.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, I started with that, with a YouTube converter, and that was a very hard and laborious task, because if you wanted to have an album, then you had to do all of that stuff manually. You have to number things and whatever. And to this day, some things I listen to and I'm like, what the hell is this order? Because I'm just used to downloading things randomly and just... it automatically sorting the music out alphabetically. I know this terrifies you, Will, as an album purist, but that's what... That was the beginning.
LimeWire, you weren't even guaranteed to get the right artist. you'd kind of guess what the artist was, but if you didn't know, you'd be sitting there searching. You might hear a track that is the same track, but someone would have misattributed the artist.
Hmm.
So I think I still have probably, if I break out the old iPod Nano, I have probably at least 50, 60 songs totally misattributed to different artists. I'm trying to think of a good example of this. I've got the CeeLo Green version of Gone Daddy Gone, and it is entirely... I think it's still labeled Violent Femmes. Or maybe it was vice versa. I don't remember.
Wow.
That's quite
eclectic there.
But like 10-year-old me did not know the difference.
This is why Shazam was invented.
Sorry, the Gnarls Barkley. It was before CeeLo went solo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, CeeLo is pre Gnarls Barkley as well. He's OG rap, like OG Atlanta rap.
Gotcha. Well, it was Gnarls Barkley that did Gone Daddy Gone, the cover.
Was that Danger Mouse and Gnarls and CeeLo Green? Was that Gnarls Barkley?
Yep.
Man, Danger Mouse, he gets everywhere. Producing one of the great albums. Literally, by producing
with everyone.
Parquet Courts' Wide Awake.
I did not know that. That checks out.
I think he also produced Turn Blue by the Black Keys.
He also did Broken Bells, which was phenomenal back in the day.
Yeah, with the lead singer from The Shins.
One half of Broken Bells, along with The Shins. Yep.
I can't remember what his name is, but he's the lead singer. He's a fantastic lyricist.
And then, of course, we can't forget Danger Doom.
Danger Doom. Man, that was such... I feel like we're slightly drifting from post-punk now by talking about Danger Mouse and his many exploits.
Oh, 100%. But technically, he did touch post-punk by doing Wide Awake.
That is a seminal post-punk album. Fun fact about Parquet Courts, they used to be a country band from Texas.
Really?
And they moved to New York and became a punk band. Or a post-punk
is that what
band.
Happens when you move to New York?
Yeah, you instantly become post-punk. The spirit of David Byrne just seeps into your... That's how Public Practice started. They were a heavier post-punk, and they became more art rock. Interestingly, Public Practice, which again released one of the best albums of this year, in my opinion, they used to be a different post-punk band that was a bit heavier, a bit darker. I can't remember what they were called. They released an EP, and it was fantastic, and I can't find it anywhere. I can just find a few of their music videos that I've been listening to compulsively.
We will add links at least to the music videos in the description. That way, people with better search skills can find that old EP.
I wonder what happens when you move to London, musically. Do you become a grime artist?
Well, either you become grime or you...
You become Peng Shui.
Peng Shui. Do you know about Peng Shui, Lisa?
No.
Peng Shui are like a mix between modern grime and like Rage Against the Machine.
Oh.
But it's like there's less rage and it's more because it's still very punky. Like there's a lot of like, I wouldn't describe Rage as punk. It's like Rage is rap metal, right?
Yeah, but if Rage is rap metal, Peng Shui is grime metal. Like,
yeah, it's but they still have that has a very punky sound to them. It's more. I don't know how to describe it. It's like Minor Threat meets grime rather than, you know, I'm trying to think of like who Rage would have, like Metallica meets grime. Metallica is not really the right band for Rage, although it kind of is.
Maybe Fugazi. I mean.
Not for Rage. I don't hear Fugazi when I listen to Rage.
I'm thinking of,
I hear Fugazi more in Peng Shui, yeah.
Anyway, if you move to London, either you become like, you know, influenced by The Windmill and you start a new post-punk band with one female member, as we've discussed, or you become a grime artist, or a jazz artist with the burgeoning jazz scene that London has right now.
Ooh, yeah.
But don't forget, you have to have short trousers and tiny hats.
Yeah, jazz bands. I mean, jazz bars.
Yeah, totally. And Peng Shui 100% upholds that.
What were you saying about jazz? Sorry, Lisa.
I don't know. Just I've got the impression that a lot of these kind of like small piano bells and jazz bells are shutting down and kind of moving away because of rent and all sorts. And I mean, now with the current climb, who knows what will happen?
Well, there's been a report that 90% of independent music venues in the UK are at threat.
Yeah.
And the Music Venue Trust is madly lobbying for about 40 to 50 million pounds. That's how much they estimate it would take to keep them all open. And they're basically saying, well, look, you've just given the airline industry 50 million pounds. Why not give probably Britain's greatest ongoing output, which is music and culture,
yeah,
for a low, low price of about 48 million pounds?
Please, Rishi.
You could buy the next Ed Sheeran.
But Will, you can't leverage that into political power, so it will never happen.
Plus, you can't forget that most of the people going to those gigs are going to be Labour voters by the end of it.
Yeah.
Or at least Lib Dem voters.
Yeah, we're not going to discuss the state of the Labour Party at the moment.
They do that for us.
Oh my gosh.
So that's what happens when one moves to London. I'm just bringing my own form of London to Edinburgh.
Come to London, Will. We have
expensive beers. You don't have Brauhaus.
Yeah.
you have the same things as Edinburgh, but at three times the price.
Yeah. And at three times the density.
Yeah. I think I told Will this, but I want the world to know my shame that I paid, and I kid you not, £6 for one pint of Corona.
I didn't even know Corona came in pints.
Yeah, I know. This is because of the desperation that is lockdown and the joy that are takeaway pints and the just absurd cruelty of the only open pub in my area that only had Corona that day.
You see, I can just picture in my head a barman grinning to himself that he's cracked open two bottles of Corona and is pouring of the other.
It wasn't a bottle. It was draft beer.
Did you see it drafted?
Yes.
That ruins my vision.
I know. It was awful.
See, I just have to go to Brauhaus where they've still got their really good beer on tap, and it's like a 500ml bottle for £3.50.
Oh, phenomenal.
Hey.
Well,
the Merlin is reopening.
I know.
Well, at least we're getting
back up and running.
At least we're getting Super Saturday soon. Way.
Super Spike Saturday.
Indeed.
Sponsored by the US buying up all of the one drug that the rest of the world needs.
To be fair, that drug doesn't actually do a whole lot. It shortens the recovery time by 4 days. It doesn't lessen the mortality rate. So, yeah. I mean, I don't want to say yeah, because it will help a lot of people be in a lot better place. But, you know, at the cost of $2,200 a round, assuming you have US like government-sponsored insurance, and like $3,200 if you don't, it's 4 days. Like, and if it doesn't lower the mortality rate, then you're just paying to not feel like crap in 4 days.
But the true question is it post-punk?
For me, post-punk, and especially cold wave, and especially Eastern European cold wave, is to suffer, but make it aesthetic. And I'm really on, board with that.
So what are, in terms of fashion aesthetics, when you go to a concert, like a Paloha concert, a Burek concert, or like Multidoma, any of those bands, is the crowd, let's assume this concert is being held in the same place. Do the crowds look different than, say, a Squid concert?
So here we go. I've actually been to three in February. And because I've been to Black Marble, I've been to Motorama, and I've been to Mochat Dama. And overall, Black Marble had a slightly older crowd that were just kind of jeans, t-shirts. There was a bit of black. I wore black jeans and an 80s shirt, basically. But it was quite chill. Motorama had a lot of Russians in it, so they were just in their general designer wars. And then, yeah, there were slightly more people wearing black, I would say. And I wore a Black Marble t-shirt to that because I was very cool. And then Mochat Dama had the weirdest crowd. Oh my god, there were lots of art school kids. There were a few actual punks with mohawks and all. For some reason, they didn't get the memo that it's post-punk. Then I had a lot of kind of techie bros in their 30s, just in their general techie wear. You know what I'm talking about, Will.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Your co-workers, basically.
That was shots fired there.
Yeah, so
I'm sitting here in a cool sweatshirt, okay?
Yeah, cool. There we go.
So the women in tech shirt.
Oh, no loafers. they were like distress sneakers, that sort of situation. But yeah, and a lot, suddenly a lot more black. But I would like to also point out that Mochat Dama had a constant mosh pit. So there were a lot of people just wearing moshable clothes. I don't know.
I'm
it just
struggling
started.
To imagine noshing.
Oh my god!
To Mochat Dama. I just.
I.
It's not fast enough.
No, it's.
Like, don't get me wrong. I love moshing. I'm near the mosh pit. I'm there, but it's.
I've seen it happen.
I don't see how with their music.
Well,
Nathan tried to mosh to Black Country New Road.
I recommend you look up a video of when they performed in Scala in London. And you will see them moshing, and then you will also see me at the very front wearing a fuchsia 80s shirt. I really stand out. But moshing did occur like intensely, and also a lot of British people screaming "I'm not a communist" in Russian, so, and just bouncing, just constantly heaving and bouncing.
I tell you what, Nathan, this actually stands out to me, because when we went to All Points East and we saw Run the Jewels, there was a lot of moshing to a lot of very moshable songs, but then there was a few guys around us in the mosh pit trying to start us moshing to one of their slower, more ballad-esque songs. And we're like, guys, what are you doing?
This song is about one of their songs about suicide, wasn't it?
Or about loved lost ones,
Yeah, and I was just like, this is not a mosh song. Everyone chill out. Wait for the next one.
No, yeah, this was the same. They just moshed to everything they could. And it was mainly to do just with the beat. They would mosh slower or faster. It was an interesting experience. By the end of it, I had bruises on my ribcage because I kept getting slammed on the railings. But the energy was quite fantastic. Well, considering that this was the third venue that was assigned to them, because the previous two were sold out. But anyway, it was fun. I remember leaving the room and someone shouting, "Whose harness is this on the floor?" So there was a lot of that element as well. Someone lost their harness.
Will, does this remind you of Sorry?
Yeah, it does actually.
That combo of people, that sounds just like the Sorry concert.
But also, like, the Sorry concert was really sedate. Everyone was standing around swaying, apart from the one guy at the back who tried to shout out some of the lyrics and then got evil-eyed by the rest of the crowd.
There we go. I thought we would be swaying. I thought post-punk is all about being goths and liking personal space.
Cold-wave
and
post-punk.
Just swaying, yeah, and just swaying in it, which is what I want to do. I don't want to mosh.
A circle pit formed in a squid.
I can't confirm a lot. Yeah, there is a lot of post-punk out there where it is so moshable and everyone is moshing. I mean, HMLTD
HMLTD are an 80s revivalist band with elements of trap. Just putting that out there.
Which is firmly within the post-punk revival definition, at least in my opinion. And was entirely moshable.
This is also pointing out to me that Scottish crowds are the best of any crowd, because they know when to not mosh, because the songs are in their suit moshing.
That's very polite.
Yes, except for you. Oh no, but like Black Country New Road.
Okay, how many Scots do you think were actually
hold on.
Crowd.
That was my point. I'm gonna draw some hate for this, but the reason why the BCNR crowd kind of sucked is because they weren't Scottish.
It's true. There were, I think half of the New Town emptied out to be in that venue. Oof. I hate saying this, but it was
a good concert. It was a bad crowd.
It was a great concert. They make fantastic music, and oh my god, hearing them live. Again, it was like going to a jazz concert in a way, and I loved it. It was fantastic, but I just couldn't get over the crowd. There was like, when they got to the crescendo of Sunglasses, there was some guy filming himself on his selfie camera, on the front camera, going like, "Yeah, I'm invincible with these sunglasses." Who are you? Do you know what this song is about?
God, I miss gigs.
Yeah, New Zealand's having gigs again. Beth sold out 2 gigs.
Wow. I'm happy for them.
They've been at the rugby. The rugby's been back on. 50,000 people were in the stadiums in New Zealand.
And here I am, being happy to eat indoors. Not in my own house.
I mean, you know, you can have a barbecue if you've got a garden.
Yeah, my living situation does not permit me to have a barbecue. But I appreciate the sentiment.
You can't see me, but I've got a raised fist in solidarity.
Mm.
Right, I think that'll do us then. I think we've covered all the bases from goth to cold wave to a little bit of history of how Russia do.
Mm.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So as a quick recap, and feel free to build on this, we've decided that cold wave revival / dark wave is the new goth rock. So it technically is still kind of post-punk, but it's become its own little separate thing, which is totally different than the UK scene because it's goth revival.
Yeah.
That sound about right?
Despite the UK scene having a large amount of influence from The Cure.
Well, none of this is set in stone, okay? These are just musings. I would still consider this post-punk, but I would also consider it slightly more goth.
Post-punk is possibly the broadest term in music music.
It really is.
It's basically just saying
so all-encompassing.
This isn't rock music. This is slightly more avant-garde.
Tell that to the Cool Greenhouse.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's also not punk music. It's post-punk. It's separated from punk. The only thing that it is subgenre of rock, separate from punk and separate from. Well, that's kind of about it.
Yeah. And then cold wave will definitely be more towards electronica.
Yeah, more kind of new wave derived.
Yeah.
Heavier use of synths and drum machines.
Synths.
And
we also posited that the reason why these bands are so popular in Latin America is namely possibly the visa issues, although that may or may not be true given tour history, but also because they're maybe underrepresenting Eastern Europe, because a lot of Eastern Europe doesn't have Spotify, and we based all of our data off of Spotify, which is maybe not at all accurate.
These are notes to ourselves to go away and research better.
Yeah.
But believe it or not, dear audience, some of us have degrees in research.
Believe it or not, some of us are just here to talk about music.
Oh yeah, I do. I'm doing a master's. I forgot.
Yeah. I literally have a master's by research and did not find an issue in a research project. You know what? We'll do better in the future.
Well, I enjoyed being here, guys.
Yes, thanks. You for joining us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. It's been a great chat. And we'll definitely have to have you on for a future more in-depth look.
Oh, thanks.
If and when. I think we'll probably, it'd be fun to do a sort of album deep dive.
Ooh.
And also having a Russian speaker for that could be it. Very helpful, because I don't speak Russian.
Surprisingly,
and I'm pretty sure Will doesn't speak Russian either.
No,
I speak a little bit of Russian, so yes, perhaps it will finally come in handy.
Well, that wraps it up. I've been Will.
I've been Nathan.
I still am Lisa.
Someone's optimistic, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
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 Goodbye.